when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome, everyone. I am Shelby Gallagher. Welcome to Prepping 2-0. I want to stop for a moment and say hello to my co-host and partner in life, Mr. Glenn Tate.
Well, hello, Shelby. Thank you for saying that. We had to actually put a little bullet point on our little show agenda to say hello to each other because we often start talking about these incredibly cool, interesting topics, and then we just kind of forget to say hello. And people are, you know, maybe they're new to the show and they hear a male or a female voice, and then all of a sudden, 7 minutes in, they hear somebody go, another voice go, yeah, that's right. And hey, that's the thing. So if you're a new listener, and we have a bunch of them every single show, Shelby and I are married. We're both prepper authors, and we're both obviously preppers and patriots in real life. And it's a fun show that we do because we're both really into this and we have a passion for it. So, yes. Hello, Shelby.
Hello. So I'm going to just jump right into the next segment of our show really quick. If you go, but I always like to tell people where to find this list that I'm about to talk about. If you go to prepping2-0.com, lower right, there's a link to the top 100 things that disappear in a collapse based upon people who survived the Bosnian collapse experience. We're on number 27. It's an odd thing. It's aluminum foil, regular and heavy duty. And you and I looked at each other earlier before the show and said, huh, it seems kind of odd. What is so important about aluminum foil? It's got some properties to it and uses, but is it really that necessary? Yes, it is. And I'm not going to belabor that. You can go Google that and find out the uses for it. But I would say this, the one thing I realized about this huge 100 list is that it's not necessarily an order of priority or importance. It's just a list. Because number 100 on the list, and we'll get to it in, you know, 75 or so more shows, is goats and chickens. I would have put goats and chickens like on number 27 and aluminum foil on 100, but there's no order to it. It's just the top 100. So encourage you to go look it up. Might be a good thing to stockpile in your preps.
Exactly. That's what the list is for. Learn from others' experience, right? That's what we do. That's the cool thing. And this is going to be a theme for when we talk to our guest, Representative Matt Shea of Washington State, in a while. Looking at historic examples and looking at precedents and looking at what other people have been through, because as I'm fond of saying, and I'm sure you agree, Shelby, I'm not terribly creative. You know, the scenario that unwinds in the 299 Days book series, if people think, oh my goodness, you're so creative, you're so predictive. Not really. Nope. I just looked at history, and you don't even have to look that deeply, just a headline level of history, and you'll see common patterns. And so we learn from other people's experiences. Well, speaking of learning, we love the Panhandle Preparedness Show, which is a prepper expo, and not just prepper. It's got great speakers. We're speakers, but we're not saying we're great. But I mean, amazing speakers. It's kind of this thing. It's in Sandpoint, Idaho. It's kind of this thing that is a coming together, a rendezvous, which I believe is a French word, by the way. I like to sound international.
Well, I like to think of it even more fun. I think it's the Woodstock of preparedness, yes. Community in the Pacific Northwest.
Without the smelly hippies.
Yes.
Exactly right. And so it is September 21st and 22nd. We're going to be there. A lot of people are going to be there. Start marking your calendars now, because the cool thing about this expo, by the way, Sandpoint, Idaho, the Panhandle, Northern Idaho, absolutely amazing, beautiful, wonderful people. It's a great family trip, too. A lot of people have this as the last RV trip or the last road trip, family camping trip of the summer season, and we highly encourage it. Panhandle Preparedness Expo. Another cool thing that's going on that I want to tell folks about is, to my great surprise, I have a two-hour live call-in radio show on KHNC 1360 AM. We're working on ways, technical ways, to get a second line in so that Shelby can be on the show when she can be on the show. It's Tuesdays It is 10 to noon Pacific. Just keep an eye out. We're going to have a phone number you can call in and ask questions, leave them as voicemails. If you're around, you know, Tuesdays, 10 to 12 Pacific, you can call in live, but it's kind of inconvenient. Not a lot of people are marking it, you know, on their calendars. I get that. They have jobs and things to do. So anyway, KHNC 1360, I am the Tuesday slot on a show they have called The Open Forum. It has been an absolute blast. So cool. That radio station is the Patriot radio station of the future. The way they've designed it and the new fresh content they have. They came to us and we were like, heck yeah, we'd love to be on that show. So anyway, look at that. Shelby, what do you have up next?
Next is What's in the Merch Shack. And that you can find on our website, prepping2-0.com. There's a tab that says shop. We've just recently designed, we've talked about this now for several weeks, cool little sticker that says really easily, patiently awaiting the collapse. And yeah, we kind of are. We're ready, I think, you know. And this is a high quality sticker. It's not just a little paper sticker that'll peel off, you know, tomorrow or once you wash it. It's a plastic quality. It's good for, we've stuck it all over every mug I think we have in our house. But we encourage you, if you purchase one, email us a picture of where you've stuck your, what we call our Patsy sticker, with your address, and we'll send you a few more to hand out to your friends. But yeah, kind of wanting to let people know where we're at with the whole patiently awaiting the collapse stickers. And here's the other thing. If people really, really, really like it, and I think they are so far, we'll try and see what we can do about making it into a T-shirt. I think it'd be kind of cool.
It's a great conversation starter, patiently awaiting the collapse. And it really speaks what a lot of us are feeling. Mm-hmm. We're patiently awaiting the collapse. And by the way, you're going to see tons of pictures on our Facebook pages, 299 Days the Book, and Shelby Gallagher, author, and of course, the Facebook page for this show, Prepping 2.0 Show. And you're going to see already, a friend of mine sent one in, a 2nd Ranger Battalion sticker on his coffee mug, along with a patiently awaiting the collapse sticker, cool stuff like that. So yeah, order a sticker, and then take a picture of it, send it by email, GlennTate123@gmail.com, ShelbyGallagher321@gmail.com, along with your address, your shipping address, and we'll send you some more stickers for free because we want you to take pictures of it and show people all the cool places you're putting. You mentioned our coffee mugs or whatever, travel mugs, I guess. Mm-hmm. We put one last night on the Harvestrite food freeze dryer. It looks really doggone cool. So yep, that's good. And we're going to put one on the 2nd Harvest Right that we have.
We should tell people what we've named them. We have two,
yes,
of them.
Yes. Why don't you tell them what the names of our Harvest Rights are?
Our Harvest Right, one is named Madge and the other one is named Angus. So Angus and Madge are going to be fired up today and continue to help us with our preps.
That's right. We're freeze drying chicken Alfredo and it is delightfully delicious and it lasts for 25 years and we make it at home. Cool. So by the way, the Harvest Right folks, I've been emailing with them. They want to come on the show and talk about food freeze drying, and that's going to be a cool show.
Yeah.
Absolutely cool show. Well, here's another neat feature that we have going on. This is a new thing. This show keeps evolving. You know, I was listening to show number one. It was good and everything, but boy, we have a lot more features. At the end of the after show, and the after show is for Patreon supporters that appears at the end of the regular radio show, we're going to have the weekly Threat Journal intelligence report from Alerts USA, which is a great thing. By the way, it's a free thing. You can get the Threat Journal, you know, emailed to you. So I'm not trying to tell everybody, oh, we're giving you free stuff because it's free. We're going to put it at the end of the after show. That way, if you don't want to hear it because maybe some in-depth analysis of what's going on in the Strait of Hormuz, you know, you don't think it affects your life, parentheses, it does. But you don't have to listen to it if you don't want to. So it's at the end of the after show. Alerts USA is a really cool product that sends you a text when things are breaking around the world. I learned about the drone being shot down, the Iranian shooting down the U.S. drone, probably about 20 minutes before it was on the news. So it's a really cool thing for preppers because you get the information first, earthquakes, that kind of stuff. So there you go. Well, Shelby, why don't you introduce our guest that we've received a lot of comments about? We said he's going to be on this week. We got a lot of positive comments. So who is our guest?
I am excited to introduce to everyone Representative Matt Shea from the district generally around Spokane, Washington. He can talk about that. He's a patriot. He's a leader. He's been in GOP leadership in the legislature, and he just survived a very, very contentious legislative session this spring, where he got to experience for the first time, sadly, what it's like to have a majority, a super majority.
Just a regular majority.
A regular majority, not a super majority of liberals. And what it's like to show up, give quorum, and not have your word listened to, not have any negotiation, but just have legislation ramrodded through. And I say that because that's the way it's been in Oregon for about 8 to 10 years now. And Oregon just achieved last election a supermajority. So really, truly, there is no voice. And with a supermajority, they can ramrod through taxes. And we're going to talk about what the consequences of that are. And sadly, living in Washington now, I shudder to think that that's what our future is going to be like. So welcome, Matt Shea. Glad you're here.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be on, and it's great to hear you guys having the show and all the fight that you're doing and putting up and educating folks. It's awesome.
Thank you. Well, we're not going to talk about politics per se, and I know you're okay with that. We talked beforehand. I just want listeners to know this isn't a thing where we have a legislator on who says, here's my 5-point plan for getting rid of bike lanes or something. I mean, this isn't that kind of politics. No. This is about how it affects the collapse and how it affects prepping, how it affects our country, and how it affects people. So I know you're not that kind of guy. By the way, Matt, I know a ton of elected officials. I've done political stuff, and I'll leave it at that. I don't like really any of them except you, to be honest. I'm not just saying that to be nice to you, because I'm obviously alienating myself from a bunch of other people. But you're the real deal, and just not a politician. You speak about collapses in America, and you've got a military background, decorated veteran. And I want folks to know up front so they continue to listen, because they need to listen to what we're going to talk about, because it directly affects their life.
Well, I was just going to add, what makes Matt much more likable than your other typical politician is that let me say this, Matt, you're not a politician first and then your day life is second. You are a patriot first. You are a veteran first. You are all of the, you serve our country various ways, and you do things for those things first. And then you're a legislator. I always do that. And I think that changes the dynamic and how you feel about service first. Your service is to God and country first, not to a committee and not to donors and not to special interest groups. So I'll let you go from there, because I hope as people walk away from this show today, they hear that difference, because we're not going to talk about votes and majorities and things like that so much. We're going to talk about political collapse. And I think, at least in my mind, that is where my biggest fear is these days, because of what's happening in headlines. So go ahead. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I appreciate that, first of all, and it is. It's about God, country, and family. And it's also about, upholding the oath that we took to defend the Constitution of the United States. And this last session, I guess I would title Surviving Marxism in Washington. And, you know, some folks look at that and they say, oh, you know, we send our political leaders off and it's never really going to touch my life. Or the other quote that I hear quite frequently is, it's never going to happen here in America, anything like that happened in the former Soviet Union or in Venezuela or whatever. That is not just naive. It is historically inaccurate, because America has been the exception to the rule worldwide that despotism has by and large enveloped people groups around the globe. And for me, and what I really like to talk about is, how is this going to affect you? Take an objective look at what is happening around the world, but also take an objective look about what's happening here in the United States, and be very candid about the conversation using objective standards, actually a lot of which I learned in the military, looking at foreign battlefields and foreign countries, and say, hey, Are we seeing some similarities here in the United States? And then if so, what can we do as average citizens who love God, who love our country, who love our friends and our family and our neighbors? What can we do to survive what is coming here in America?
Outstanding. And, you know, we're going to talk about that in a moment. There's sort of a current event going on that involves what you're talking about that a lot of people are interested in. There in Oregon, the communist governor of Oregon, Kate Brown, has basically sicked the Oregon State Police, and I don't know if they are arrest warrants per se, but she has ordered the apprehension, I think is an accurate way to put it, of Republican senators because they, facing a supermajority of Democrats, which means nothing the Republicans do matters. I mean, they can't stop bills or anything, and there's a terrible bill about climate goofiness that's going to destroy the Oregon economy even more. So she has basically sent the police out to arrest Oregon senators. It's not made up. Go ahead and Google it. You're a legislator, and you're the kind of guy who would be arrested by a left-wing governor, to be very candid. What do you make of all this? Because in my mind, this is the second-to-last card legislators have to play, which is walking away and preventing a quorum. Obviously, if they're not there, there isn't enough of the legislature there to hold the vote, so they can shut down the legislature by leaving. It's the second-to-last card you can play in a collapsing, despotic state government. What do you make of all this?
Well, there's 3 points. Let's start on the very first one, and that is the idea that they're exercising a parliamentary privilege to walk out. The reason that there are quorum rules, and by the way, we don't have the same quorum rules in Washington State as they do in Oregon. We did walk off the floor of the House of Representatives, I think, 2 years ago. The Democrats went out and voted anyway, and it was the only vote in the history of the legislature where it was a majority vote to zero. There was no nay votes because we were not on the floor in protest to what they were trying to do. So we don't have the same quorum rules in Washington, but down in Oregon, they have the right to exercise that. Quorum rules exist in parliamentary procedure as a check against majority despotism. That's the whole point that they're there. And so they exercised their parliamentary right to walk off the floor of the Senate in Oregon. And by the way, those senators are no longer in Oregon. They're in other locations, and the governor essentially threatened him and said, well, we're just going to detain you and bring you back. And one of the Oregon senators said, okay, if you're going to threaten me with that, then I believe his quote was, you should send bachelors that are heavily armed. And this is a former Special Forces veteran that said that. And he said he wouldn't be a political prisoner in his own country. And here's the important point about that. Tell me the last time that somebody even uttered that in America, or that discussion was even had in America. And this is where this is coming to a head right now. And the second point that I would make is you can look this up on The New American. Trevor Loudon, who's arguably one of the foremost experts on Marxism in the world, talks about 4 essentially communist and socialist organizations that have banded together: the Communist Party USA, the Committees of Correspondence for Democracy and Socialism, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, and the Democrat Socialists of America. That last organization is the largest Marxist organization in America, boasting 100 sympathizers and or active members in the U.S. Congress and 25 in the U.S. Senate. These folks want to provoke some sort of a confrontation, and that is the continuous theme that we're seeing out there, and that's what they're trying to do in Oregon. Interestingly, it's the same governor who tried to provoke violence, despite the fact of many state legislators trying to prevent violence down at the Malheur Refuge, and it ended up in the death and murder of Lavoy Finicum. So we're seeing this march toward confrontation here in America. And just to put an exclamation mark on that point, PJ Media came out recently with an article conclusively showing the link. You can look this up online again, showing the link between 962 Antifa accounts and the Huffington Post, The Guardian, specifically Jason Wilson, a reporter who tried to deny that when I called him out on it, and who, by the way, has attacked yours truly, and the Southern Poverty Law Center. So a direct link to a violent Marxist organization in this country, and it's not making the mainstream media. The other point behind that, I had a reporter come up to me up in Wenatchee and try to ambush me, and I just turned the question around. He said, do you denounce political violence? I said, of course, and nobody that I associate with is going to advocate that, particularly those of us veterans who have been to war and have seen the ravages of war. Nobody is going to advocate for that. But I have a question for you. Will you denounce political violence from groups like Antifa? And he refused to do it. I asked him four times. And this shows where we're headed. The third point is that things like Facebook now are being used, and there's two articles out on that. You can see it at Technocracy News and also The New American, how Facebook is using offline, so not online, but offline behavior to then create essentially a list of people that they say are, quote, hate agents. And it's important to understand that this demonization that has occurred over the last decade, calling the Tea Party domestic terrorists, other people domestic terrorists, sitting elected officials domestic terrorists, they're trying to create a list and then change the law at the federal level. In fact, there was a hearing in Congress about this here, I think, to the law so that people that are labeled domestic terrorists, just based on their political views, no links to terrorist organizations like Hamas, like the Council of American Islamic Relations is, through the Holy Land Foundation trial, but just labeling them domestic terrorists and then turning that around and saying, okay, now we're going to put them in prison.
Exactly. And if you would have said this a few years ago, I would have thought anyone saying this was crazy. And what we're talking about are real things. Yeah, keep going with this. I'll call it demonization and criminalization of opposing political views. That would be our political views, by the way.
Right. So you have a progression that occurs where you have marginalization, you have demonization, then you finally have criminalization, and then the last part is elimination. And we saw this in Germany, we saw this in Russia in the 1930s and 40s, in Germany in the 1930s and 40s, where they effectively demonized a population. So they will say something to the effect of, all of the social ills that we're facing right now are the Jews. All the social ills we're facing right now are the Christians. And this is rooted in Marxism. Karl Marx was an avowed anti-Semite, an avowed anti-Christian. His writings show, in fact, he wrote a book called The World Without Jews. And in some of his early poetry, he effectively countenances evil. So this is rooted. Marxism was rooted in evil. And it's carried over into these policies that we're seeing again. And one of the interesting things that we're seeing right now is the use of litigation. So there's been demonization, marginalization. We're seeing litigation now where people are losing their jobs, losing their businesses because the left, the Marxists are coming after them. And I hate using left-right. It's the Marxists that are coming after folks and trying to punish them solely because of the content of their political beliefs. And in a lot of cases, in fact, most cases, these are patriotic beliefs like the Constitution means what it says, the Bible means what it says, things that in America 20 years ago were taken for granted.
Absolutely, and I'm serious when I say this. Dear Southern Poverty Law Center, listening to this podcast right now, because Matt Shea was on it and you've targeted him, when he said something about, quote, you know, it's the Jews' fault, he was talking about an example of bad thinking, wrong thinking, the opposite of his thinking. It pains me to have to say that out loud, but I think I need to. And by the way, Southern Poverty Law Center, if you report what Matt said out of context when you've been given this context, I have a Washington State law license, and I'm going to sue you for defamation and get some of the $40 million you have in offshore bank accounts because of how you fundraise off of this nonsense. Anyway, just wanted to put that little marker out there. Matt, we're going to have to wrap up segment one. We're going to come back on segment two, and then in the after show, we're going to have a ton to talk about. So thank you for being our guest, and we're going to hear from you in the second half coming up next.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
Prepper Press is a small, independent publisher of survival nonfiction and post-apocalyptic fiction. At PrepperPress.com, you'll find a variety of books to guide you on your journey to prepare for a compromise to the electrical grid, natural disasters, economic collapse, political strife, or similar scenarios that could disrupt life as we know it. You'll also discover fictional yet believable stories about what happens to society when everything falls apart. To learn more, visit Prepper Press online at PrepperPress.com.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
We're back in segment two. At the very end of the last segment, I brought up the point that the Southern Poverty Law Center is going to accuse Matt Shea of being anti-Semitic. Matt, what are some things that you've done, not talk, but actual actions, and let's lay to rest this nonsense about Matt Shea being anti-Semitic. Just talk about that.
Well, I think for everybody that's listening out there, this is going to eventually happen to you. And for many people, it's probably already happened to your neighbor in some fashion. But social justice warriors, there's three rules, according to Vox Day, and I agree with this. Social justice warriors always lie. Number two, they always double down on their lie. And number three, they always project onto you how they are themselves. In other words, if they accuse somebody of Russian collusion, it probably was them that was doing the colluding with the Russians. And for me, when they try to do this, they try to project onto me or project onto other people that are patriots around this country. And this is happening in at least seven other states that I know of. You have to fight back with the truth. That's what wins. So I'm a member of and have been working with Save the Persecuted Christians organization to highlight Christian persecution around the world. But also, as a legislator, I brought up a resolution to honor Israel on its 70th anniversary of independence. I've also introduced other bills like that and resolutions. But it was interesting that it was the Speaker of the House of Representatives in Washington that denied that resolution from coming to the floor for a full floor vote. And so we had to do a caucus resolution instead to give to the Israeli Consul General, Shlomi Kaufman. So that's never brought up in the media, but they still try to tar and feather people. And it's important we get that truth out. And it really undermines their credibility if they have any really left. And I think that that's important, especially in the next year and a half in the run-up to the 2020 elections, that we're doing that and calling them out everywhere we can.
Absolutely, and thank you. So how do you see politics triggering a collapse? Or maybe I don't want to load up the question with my assumptions. What are the connections between the political climate we're in and a collapse? And just roll with this and just keep talking, because this is good stuff.
So I'm going to do an objective analysis using several sources. I'll cite those sources, and then we can just do the overlay and a brief analysis at the end. This is from studying military history, studying geopolitical history and strategy. They're really the best place to go first is a book by Sir John Bagot Glubb, G-L-U-B-B. It's called The Fate of Empires. And in The Fate of Empires, he identifies six main ages of empires. And the final age is called the Age of Decadence, where and I want to read some of these things that are a summary. And this is just prior to the collapse of a system. Now, he wrote this almost 40 years ago. So nobody can say, oh, you know, this is just written because of the times. He wrote this 40 years ago as an objective analysis of history. And what he discovered is that empires typically last about 250 years. So if we're applying that to the United States of America, we're looking at about 2026 as that 250-year mark. Now, it's not like that year and it happens. It's just that's the general time frame for empires. And in the Age of Decadence, he identified these factors. First of all, manliness is shunned. There is a general ethnic and moral homogeneity. In other words, the same values, traditions, and morals is shunned. normalcy bias becomes institutionalized. There is an increasing energy spent on amusement, leisure, and sport. Now, if you just take those factors and compare it to where we are in the United States of America, that should give you a little bit of pause. But also, the age of decadence is marked by defensiveness, where military readiness and aggressiveness is denounced, pessimism, where there's a lack of success, where corruption and dissension and division grows, materialism, where there's a pursuit of material goods as an overriding goal instead of something that's a tool, frivolity, where you basically eat, drink, and be merry. There's an influx, and this is interesting, an influx of foreigners into the country, and typically what they're talking about there is illegal foreigners into a country or foreigners that are not trying to assimilate into the culture. Then a welfare state and the growth of a welfare state and the weakening of religion. And you see these as factors that he laid out, again, over four decades ago. And you put that over the United States, and it gives us, I think, a lot of pause. So he theorized that, and I think very well, throughout all the ages of history, the empires typically last about 250 years or 10 generations, a generation being 25 years. You then take another book called The Fourth Turning, which was an analysis not of countries or empires, but was an analysis of the generations of human beings. And they essentially, the authors of that, William Strauss and Neil Howe, they effectively figured out that there was four main types of generations. So that's what happened. Every four generations, you had a fourth turning. The first turning was kind of the high of the society, you know, the kind of the golden age. Then you had the second turning, which was kind of an awakening where there was the pursuits of other things in a sense of personal authenticity. Young activists and spiritualists kind of look back and try to evaluate kind of the high mark of society. Then you had the third turning, which was really the unraveling, and the fourth turning, which was the crisis. Now, if you look at where we're at as generations, again, in this country, it looks very clearly like we're in a fourth turning, which not just is there a crisis, but there's also a tremendous amount of opportunity. So the founding fathers' generation was in a fourth turning. Their generation really not just had a crisis, but used that crisis to take a great leap forward for freedom and liberty. So again, you overlay the generational analysis of the fourth turning over America, and we're right at that fourth turning here in America. Now, I always like to look at what our enemies think about us, and in particular the former Soviet Union, the KGB, today the FSB, and those intelligence organizations and the Marxists, what they think about us. And there was a defector to the United States of America. His name was Yuri Bezmianov, a.k.a. Thomas Schumann. And he laid out four stages of subversion that the Marxists do in a society. The first stage, or stage one, which typically lasts in the decades, is demoralization. In other words, they go into a society and they try to undermine the morals of a society. And Karl Marx himself wrote about this, that socialism is intent on undermining the morals of a society because then it makes it ripe for crisis and takeover by the Marxists. The second stage is called destabilization, and that usually lasts 2 to 5 years. There will be a coordinated political and civil unrest. You'll see – they'll try to say it's not coordinated, but it will be coordinated. So you'll see staged protests, you know, on the political scene, and then you'll also see violent protests in cities. We've seen that in America already. Then you have stage three, which is the crisis stage, and that lasts for a period of months. And you have all of a sudden out of nowhere this explosion of violence, running violence, if you will, in major cities in a country. You see the coordinated action of politicians also fomenting division in the legislature, in the executive branch, in the judicial branch, or their equivalents in other countries. You see that start to happen. Then you have stage four, which is the normalization. And typically what the Marxists try to do, they create the crisis, and then the Marxists say the solution is more government. We need more government structure. We need more of the governing bureaucrats. And that is the solution to bring peace back, and then there will be peace for a long while. Now, that peace is effectively tyranny and oppression for the folks that disagree with that, as was experienced for seven decades in the former Soviet Union, especially by Christians. So that's what the former Soviet Union, the KGB really had, but I believe the Marxists still use that template to this day. Then you have the five stages of collapse. Dmitry Orlov, a prolific author, but also a very studied individual who's very methodical, lists five stages of collapse. First stage is financial collapse, and that is faith in business as usual is essentially lost. Stage two is commercial collapse, or faith in the market shall provide is lost. Stage three is political collapse, or faith that the government will take care of you, that's lost. Stage four, which is social collapse, faith that your people will take care of you is lost. And stage five, cultural collapse, where faith in the goodness of humanity is lost. Now, again, if you overlay that template over America, it looks like right now we have a political social issue happening, because there is one part of the country that's not recognizing the elected leader or the election results with Donald Trump. You have a deep state that is intentionally trying to undermine everything he's trying to do. And then also you have faith that your people will take care of you, or social collapse. You see kind of the cracks starting to happen. And you have some voices that are on the Marxist side saying that effectively there is no goodness in humanity now. Trump is evil. The Republicans, the Christians, the constitutionalists, all those folks are evil, and there really is no goodness in humanity left. And so that's what they're trying to get us to, that next stage. All right. The last thing are the five factors of civil war. And I want you to just listen to this and think about where we're at in our country today. Number one, polarization without resolution to the differences. Is that happening in the United States? Number two, divisive press coverage, or press coverage intentionally with an agenda to subvert those folks that are trying to defend the Constitution of the United States. Is that happening in America? Number three, weakened institutions. So, for example, weakened churches, weakened family units. That's the meaning of institution in that context. Number four, a sellout of leadership. In other words, according to Rich Higgins' national security memo, is it true that the Republican leadership at the national level has become the designated defeat mechanism for the Marxists? And if you haven't read that national security memo, it's absolutely fantastic. Rich Higgins lays out who is coming against this country and who is behind the deep state. The last factor is a legitimization of violence. And I would bring us back to that conversation I had with that reporter asking him to denounce violence by groups like Antifa, and he refused to do it. So there's a legitimization of violence that is occurring, particularly among the Marxists. And you'll notice that particularly on the Patriot side, there is an eschewing of violence and saying, hey, look, we believe in self-defense, but nobody's going to go on the offensive. We do believe in self-defense. And that's really what that Oregon senator was talking about. So that's it in a nutshell. I know that's a little long, but if you take that analysis, overlay it in America, have an objective look at what's happening in America, we are very perilously close to a revolutionary crisis in America. And I mean revolutionary from the communist context of that word, that we're in a pre-revolutionary stage right now on the verge of a revolutionary crisis in America with the Marxists.
Holy Toledo. Yes, exactly. By the way, I have read Colonel Bezmenov, Dmitry Orlov. I eat his material up. He's amazing. He was a big influence on me when I wrote 299 Days. And The Fourth Turning is amazing, and people should read it. I remember in the late 90s watching C-SPAN, because I'm a complete nerd, right? Let's be honest. And I remember the authors of The Fourth Turning talking about there's going to be a financial credit freeze, is what they called it, around late 2008 and 2009, 10 years before it happened. So they have predictive credibility with me. You've mentioned some of the things to look for. Go ahead and relate those to things that are going on right now. I mean, a lot of people, when they were listening to you, said, oh, yeah, I see that happening. But what are some things maybe that people aren't seeing easily that sort of validate this theory?
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about what's happening right now in the run-up to the election of 2020. We're seeing particularly from the trucking industry, a massive downturn in the trucking industry. And the trucking industry really is a canary in the coal mine of the U.S. economy. So we're seeing an approach downward as we reach the election time frame. Number two is we're seeing, again, an organizing of the Marxist elements. I talked about those coalitions kind of forming. But let's bring it down practically to folks on the street. You are seeing right now teachers, for example, fired for expressing an opinion outside of the workplace. And this is key. Outside of the workplace that is contrary to the accepted political correctness in a school. You're seeing that happen. I saw it happen with a student at a university here in Washington State who just gave an opinion that was outside the accepted norm and was punished for it. It was fired and suffered some retribution for it. You're seeing politicians now attacked, not just physically like Steve Scalise, but you're also seeing politicians demonized and marginalized. They're called haters. There's attempts really to label them domestic terrorists just because they disagree with a person. They're trying to label them as an agenda, by the way, and this is coming out of a coalition in Oregon, as an agenda, try to label everybody white supremacist, even though the whole ideology of white supremacy is repugnant to those of us that love freedom. And also, it's a very, very small portion of the population. Some say as low as only 5,000 in the entire country that believe that kind of garbage. So you have this demonization that is occurring, and is also not just politicians, but you're seeing businesses now being punished for supporting constitutional, patriotic causes, Christian causes. You're seeing businesses punished where they'll be put on a list for boycott. They'll be put on a list to have protests in front of their business, or just have letters and emails sent in. And you again overlay that with where we're headed and where we are in an overarching sense, and it's very, very concerning.
You know, I can add one thing to the list of things that may not be apparent to people that validate what you're saying, and that is a topic that you're too much of a gentleman to talk about, and I will, because I'm much less so of one. You receive death threats all the time, and you don't complain about it. You're a combat veteran. I don't, you know, think that you walk around in fear. You're a Christian. You have nothing to fear. But could you just, and if you don't want to talk about it, that's okay. Tell us about what it's like being you and getting the death threats, you, your family members, some of, and don't get into details, the graphic nature of them. This is for real, everybody listening. This man puts up with real live death threats, and I'm guessing takes significant security measures. And I mean, tell us about that, if you will.
Well, I'll give a couple of very specific examples. And again, this is documented and concrete. And I've heard this also from other legislators, not just in Washington, but other states too, that some similar things have occurred. But death threats directly aimed at my family. One of the most interesting ones was, you, quote, you and your Nazi friends should be eliminated from the face of the earth. Actually, you and your Nazi friends and family should be eliminated from the face of the earth. And I thought, you should really read that statement, which is a classic example of protection.
Ironic. Right? Ironic, right. Isn't it?
Right.
Jeez.
And, you know, we've caught people surveilling us and following family members. And in one particular case, there was a man arrested for a triple homicide who had a file folder with my picture, my wife's picture in his house when they raided his house. And that picture next to it were some notes written to a third party. To this day, we don't know who that is. And so you have those kind of things occur. And this is America that this is happening in. And it is not pie in the sky stuff or, oh, that's exaggeration. It's happening more frequently in the last year than it has in all the other years prior, that at least I've been involved in public service. So this is important, because if it's happening to elected officials, it's probably already happening to your neighbors, and it probably is going to eventually happen to you. And so, as Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, when should we do something? We should do it when they're coming for our neighbors' stuff and they're coming to harass our neighbors. We should stand up for them when their jobs are threatened, when their livelihood is threatened, when they're being marginalized and demonized. We should stand up for our neighbors and not just take that easy road of saying, you know, I'm glad that didn't happen to me.
Yeah.
Well, and This is a dark topic, but it needs to be discussed. What role do you see political assassinations taking in all of this? And I hope that never happens to you.
Well, look, there have been Marxists who have called for the elimination of Republicans, very publicly have said that, actually. A Democrat back in the Midwest said that. You had Steve Scalise, who actually had an attempted assassination occur to him. I personally have seen some Antifa web pages that have said we need to take care of the Matt Shea issue. So there are calls already, and albeit they write them in an implied way. But I tell you right now, if that was any patriot group out there that had done something like that, it'd be national news. But the fact these guys do it on a regular basis, and one of the Antifa groups in downtown Seattle said you just take power, and it's a picture of a lady with an AK-47 over her shoulder. They are pointed that way, and eventually they are going to take shots at elected officials, especially with the continuing downplaying that's occurring in the mainstream media, calling them peaceful protesters, or silent protesters and such garbage like that, when videos clearly show otherwise.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Antifa being so-called peaceful protesters. One of the things, again, that you have too much class to complain about, but I will. And I'll keep it vague, and you can be more specific if you want. The Washington State Patrol is charged with protecting legislators. And you get a bunch of death threats, and the Washington State Patrol, who reports to the current left-wing wacko governor of our state, Jay Inslee, the Washington State Patrol, I know tons of great troopers, by the way, the Washington State Patrol as an organization does not seem to be protecting you. And I find that politicization of security for elected officials to be extremely troubling. Do you have any thoughts on that?
There are a couple aspects of it that have been deeply troubling. Out of the dozens of death threats I've received, only two were investigated, one where it was actually referred for prosecution, and that prosecution, at least up to this moment, has never happened. So we'll see if it does happen. Detective in the case I'm talking about right now did a great job. But the fact that dozens of death threats have occurred and there haven't been investigations in all of them, to a lot of folks is very troubling. Again, to me, this is what's going to be happening. So, I kind of accept the reality of the situation. There is an important point there, though. And there are some people, especially in the former, that were former intelligence folks or former special forces folks, they've said something along the lines of, hey, we are just going to wait until something happens. And then we're just going to lay low. We're going to wait until something happens. And I think that's a dangerous strategy to take, because if you're laying low now, you may not have the ability later to do something and to stand up to tyranny. You should be doing it right now. And even if you're not maybe public about it, you should be doing it right now. And in situations where you have elected officials directly threatened like that, there are ways you can help, not publicly, but help defend your friends and neighbors against that kind of marginalization, criminalization, and demonization. So that's a message I would put out there to folks that listen to your program.
So then that makes me just ask then, Matt, what can people do now? What would you suggest?
Well, I think the first thing is get organized locally. Find like-minded friends and family. We all have family that's, lives in downtown Seattle, and it's always just a terrible Thanksgiving sometimes with discussions around the table. But I'm talking about find the folks that you already know are on board and organize them. Number two, you don't have to go out on social media and everything, but you can spread the word. And I think that's important. Spread the word and educate people, too, on where we're at using these objective analyses and standards. Do that. The third thing is be prepared locally, not just for you and your family, but be prepared locally for your neighbors as well and some of your other friends who may not be in a position to be as prepared as you are, but you can be. So that's one of the ways you can love your neighbor. And that's not to say that, people should be, mooching off other people or something like that, or you should expect unaccountability. What I'm saying is that there are some people that are out there that just aren't in a position to be as prepared as you are. Account for that fact and not just have it be about you. Those are three things, if your listeners remember, I think are critical. And then I would just add on top of that, read Glenn Tate's and Shelby Gallagher's books. They're awesome primers.
Well, thank you very much. You know, and we have about 45 seconds before we go into the after show. When you were talking about be prepared and help people, that's what we're going to talk about in the after show, specifically Patriot leadership is in after the collapse and in the restoration. And a little preview of it is we, the Patriots, now leading, organizing, preparing, we're going to be the ones that the general population looks to, because we're the ones that, number one, have stuff. Number two, we're squared away. And number three, and this is the most important, we're ethical. We're not going to mistreat people, and they will have been mistreated going into it. And think about the restoration. Well, we are out of time. Join us for the after show. This conversation's just getting started. So thank you, Matt Shea, and we'll talk to our Patriot folks in the after show. Shelby, take us out.
Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Thank you, Ben Franklin, for a great charge. Have a great week, everyone.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.